Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. All right, we're here at the International Conference on Psychology, Counseling, and Education, and we're doing our second interview of the day. Very exciting to talk with Rahit Sagu from England, the UK.
Yeah, from Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge. No, I don't live in Cambridge, I live in London, so yes.
How far? But Cambridge is, you said, how far from London?
It's around 62 miles outside of London.
I didn't know that.
It's a beautiful city, and obviously home to University of Cambridge.
Cambridge University.
Yeah, University of Cambridge, you know, arch rivals to University of Oxford.
Yes.
Arch rivals to Harvard.
Oh, yes.
A lot of arch rivals.
Yeah.
So, but we are in the Philippines.
Yep.
At an international conference.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is the second conference that has been organized by PsychReg, and so it's good to meet you. This is our first meeting. You've been a name on articles,
I know.
We work on the journal together and those sorts of things. But it's good to finally meet you.
Yeah, good to put faces.
Now, and that we have to tell
real
you.
Life faces to Bernie and Richard.
That's right.
Because I'm on the Bernie and Richard show.
And what was I going to say? This is an interesting character here, this man sitting across from us. I had no idea who he was. He looked like a bit of a ne'er-do-well, but he's actually a nurse by training, a pediatric nurse, right?
Yep, I've been for 20 years.
The first
Asian male pediatric
nurse. Asian male pediatric nurse in
England.
In England.
Yeah.
Right. And so now you teach nursing.
Now I teach it, yeah.
Right, okay.
Because obviously, originally, being from an Indian background, in America, Asian is represented as East Asian, but from being from an Indian background, we're traditionally seen as being doctors, engineers,
counselors. Oh, yes, that's right.
And,
you wanted to disappoint them.
I wanted to really disappoint my parents and come out of that loop
this
as well.
This would do it.
Say, let's do something totally different and radical. So 20 years ago, I did it. I changed it. And so, it's paid, broke glass ceilings.
Yes.
That's exactly
you
what
did.
Yep.
You broke a glass ceiling.
Yeah.
That's correct. Okay. But it has been a pleasure meeting you and listening to your research.
Likewise.
Yes. And besides being a pediatric nurse, wait until you hear his research interests.
Yeah, very different.
Very different. That's just so incongruous. There's this.
Well, what was fantastic was when you got up to do your talk today, I didn't look at the program ahead of time to anticipate what you were going to talk about, but I was expecting something related to pediatric nursing, and you started talking about snooker.
Yeah.
What we call snooker.
What you call snooker, and I call snooker.
And you call it snooker.
Yeah.
And I thought when I first saw the title, I thought, I thought snooker was like billiards, but certainly nobody would be talking about snooker, at this kind of a conference.
Oh.
So there must be some other, it must have some other meaning.
Yes.
Snooker must have some other meaning besides billiards.
Without a doubt, it has so much more of a meaning apart from billiards. And from my research, as I just said to you, I looked at mental health awareness in terms of playing the game snooker and how it can generate mental health as well, positive mental health as well. So that's where my lens came from through to the game.
You're publishing research on this topic.
Yes, I've published.
How did you get, what's the connection between your research and your work?
None.
Speechless.
There is a connection in terms of my work, because obviously it's about mental health. And as a nurse, you're in the arena of health and social care. And so I think when we look at health and social care from a holistic perspective, the arc of health and social care covers, it's quite ambiguous, it covers all areas. And I think as a children's nurse, yeah, it's a little left field doing something in snooker, but it still, I think, covers that umbrella of health and social care. And that's the first and foremost as a professional.
Was your research a degree requirement?
No, my research, actually, my
research... Or was it completely...
It was completely just something totally different that I came across. So it wasn't required within my work as well. I mean, coupled with that, my PhD is very different as well. I'm now in my second year of my PhD, but my PhD is actually, yes, work-related, but not nurse-related. I'm actually looking at the role of the higher education tutor underpinning social pedagogic approaches through the lens of retention and retaining students as well. So that's within the nursing program, the children's nursing program. So it's kind of work-related, but it's also looking at something very different as well. So I've got a mixed bag of research, I would say, a very mixed bag of it.
Okay, cool. I was just thinking, I want to allow sound to be able to start.
So yeah, that research that you're doing for your doctorate is very different, but it's still related because you talked a lot in your presentation about pedagogy and learning and sort of the study, the science of learning related to sports psychology and billiards and snooker. And so it's kind of bridged that way, I suppose, but it is a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, it's still got a pedagogical stance in terms of it. And I think, well, pedagogy crosses all realms of learning, doesn't it, really, in all disciplines. We've got to, you know, adapt it for all disciplines as well. It's whatever niche you pick out from that pedagogical stance as well. Just like your talk as well this morning, you know, you've got the likes of Aristotle, Plato, etc. You know, that's the ethos of philosophy anyway. And that, I think that runs through most research that we carry across. But in terms of looking at it from the angle of snooker pedagogy, yeah, it's a phrase that I coined through my research in terms of looking at a sport that you learn. You learn from, you develop, and it develops you cognitively. And from that development cognitively, you can then you know, play it and perform. And then you can start to perform it. And once you've performed it, you then take what a concrete kind of thing into an abstract as well, and then you create what you create in terms of what you're doing as well. So it's a learning sport. But I think the most important bit about what I did, you know, this morning in terms of my research was homing in that, you know, it's about benefiting. A sporting activity can benefit mental health positively. I think that's the best take-home message that hopefully a lot of the delegates had today.
And it was fantastic. You presented it very well, because the idea of using a sport as and looking at a sport as it relates to its relationship with mental health, you know, it was a massive study, 1,300 participants, and you know, looking at what people thought and how it related for them, you know, to mental health and to some of the different aspects of their life. That was great, because it, as you were talking about it and you got to the point that these weren't even like professional players. These were just sort of recreational players that just played every once in a while. But they talked about how significant playing snooker was to their mental health and their overall well-being.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the players that were in the survey were everyday players, novices, possibly amateurs, those who just pick up a snooker cue a snooker stick and then, you know, begin to play. And whether they play periodically or they play just now and again, etc., sporadically, it's just what they get out of the game. And that's the most important part. And I think that's really significant. That came out in my study as well. To have, out of 1,300 participants, over 300, you know, you're looking at a quarter of those participants saying that snooker actually benefited mental health. And I think if we increase the participants, my question would be, how much more would we get? How much more beneficial could it be in the long run? for people, how much they enjoy it and what they see through it as well. And what areas of mental health it might improve. Some of the participants obviously said, you know, it was a stress relief, anxiety, relieved their anxiety, relieved their stress. It was about going to a club and playing snooker and getting away from the environment around them, you know, being stuck in a, you know, in a pool hall in a darkened room, you're away from society, you just, you know, enclosed yourself and isolated yourself as well. And I think that's quite interesting in itself because it's a solo sport. And it's a very different solo sport because if you think about some of the other solo sports like tennis or boxing, it, even though it's a solo sport, you've got your partner in front of you. It's visualization in front of you. However, when you're playing snooker, your partner sat down and what's in front of you is just a green base table and that's it. And it's kind of not away from you. You're not, there's no contact at all with your partner or there's no medium between the two of you in terms of that contact. So I think that takes it more unique in terms of its originality and it's more even more isolated in that way as well. So I think in that respect it takes away all the problems for some people, reduces their anxiety, they can begin to concentrate on what they're doing solo. And it is literally a solo activity, none less than gaming, you know, sitting down with a game and you're on your own, except here at least with gaming, you're sat on a coach and couching and you're doing anything. But there is some degree of physical movement around the snooker table as well, and then there's some degree of socialization with the other player as well, so it makes a difference.
Absolutely, I'm sure. And I, as you were just saying that, what made me think of was our previous conversation with Fraser Smith, talking about mental health issues with men. And though I don't want to make the assumption, I would guess that many of your participants were men. And so I wonder if the true impact on mental health may have even been higher, but because of some of this stereotypical man thing that that he talked about, you know, they may not have admitted or talked about mental health as much, and that even though a quarter of your population or your sample endorsed mental health as something that it helped with, I wonder if it could even be more than that, you know, if they were a little bit more in tune with their mental health status.
Yeah. And I think it's ironic as well, because it was obviously I did my most of research of secondary data, because it was the World Snooker sent out a survey to their respondents and respondents then filled in the survey. But I think what's ironic is, in terms of mental health, men would do it if it's on a survey. You're not going to talk to somebody about it. But if it's a question and answer session that you've got in front of you, you may just fill that question up and say yes, as opposed to saying yes in front of someone right in front of you. And I think that certainly came out, and that's probably why, yes, the assumption might be that a lot of the participants that said yes may have been male. And having that medium of a computer to turn around and say, right, I've got nobody to answer to, got no communication between us, I can just fill in this survey and I can express myself how I want to, and there's nobody going to judge me apart from whoever else is going to read this and take the information thereafter. And it's anonymous as well. So I think that's what makes it really, you know, a little different as well, as opposed to myself and yourself talking in a bar. I'm not really going to declare anything. I'm still going to have that manly attitude, like Fraser says, that kind of man-up attitude, that, you know, that bold kind of attitude of not saying anything to you at all. Unless, of course, we've got about 20 shots of tequila and I feel very emotional.
I'm not sure that I would say much after 20 shots.
I've heard that you are. I've heard that you're a hugger after a few drinks.
Not me. Not me. But you also mentioned the mental health aspect. As you were talking in your lecture this afternoon, I was sort of visualizing, you know, what it'd be like for people, you know, playing the game. And, you know, it is one of those sports that would require you to really take control of your stress and anxiety. I mean, you have to be very still and calm. Your hands can't be shaking. You're nervous. You know, you can play football or soccer, and you know you can be nervous out there and nobody's going to tell that you're shaking or that you're nervous or anything like that. But, you know, as soon as you go up to the table in snooker, you're going to be able to tell.
Yeah. I mean, the snooker, the game, requires a phenomenal amount of concentration and focus as well. And it's you from watching it as well, you select your shots, three shots in advance of where you want the cue ball or etc., the white ball to go and where you want it to land as well. So it's very strategic in terms of it. And that's why the pedagogy comes in there, that learning, where do I put things, where do I want them? And most players will learn it from watching it, and from watching it, you then practice. Practice makes perfect. And it comes down to that cognitive development as well, where you keep doing it by repetition. And once you've repeated it several times, you've got the neural activity in your brain, like you were talking about earlier. And that's it. It then sustains that cognitive ability. And that's what I found from that, from my study as well, looking at people in terms of what they do. And it was you know, throwing at me. It was just, you know, literally staring at me that this really does help with cognitive development as well. Because then it's other things as well. It's like any sport. You've got to learn the rules of the game. You've then got to learn how to play the game. Then you've got to learn how to enjoy it. And that's the whole ethos of improving your mental health. Because if you enjoy it, you're going to love it. And if you enjoy what you do, like any other sport, it's going to improve your mental health.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and the more that we understand about the relationship between mental health and some of those kinds of activities, the more we can create interventions and strategies for helping people deal with some mental health issues. I was thinking that it would be great for us to do a prospective study looking at the effects of playing a game like snooker with individuals, teens, and maybe young adults who have ADHD or, you know, anxiety or something like that, and seeing what it would, what benefits it could provide as a treatment, or as a sort of a supplemental treatment with along with some mental talk therapy or something like that. It seems like it could be a great strategy.
Yeah, I mean, my research has basically opened the door for that. So yeah. It's open, you know. At the end of it, I'd make recommendations that yes, this, though, you know, it exists and it can help, but there are areas where we can take this much further, and those are the areas that you can take it for, you know, in terms of just different areas like ADHD, different areas of anxiety, depression, and getting a group of the same people that have the same mental health kind of anomaly, and then seeing if we can then use snooker as a therapeutic measure for them. And yeah, that's worth considering. That's certainly worth considering, and elevating this study to another level, and really defining it in an area of mental health, because obviously mental health is quite ambiguous, but in an area of mental health where it's quite specific. So that would be interesting in itself. And that's what led myself to my second bit, what I'm doing as well. So after publishing this study, now World Snooker have asked me to do a second study, and we're now looking kind of like in that area, but it's looking at older people's well-being. I was going to touch into older people's mental health, but I think ethically it's very difficult to, you know, even get through the ethics as well, because if we think about mental health from the elderly arena, the older person's arena, it's vast, and, you know, to get pre-screening tools and etc. and so forth will be difficult to go through the ethics committee for it. So I looked at then the well-being. And we've used, the Warwickshire model from Warwick University in terms of measuring their well-being as well, and use a mixed method approach for the research as well. So that's what we're doing now, and we're going to get a group of elderly people into a snooker hall for 8 to 10 weeks. They'll play snooker with each other, and then just measure, give them questionnaires on their well-being before and at the end of their games, and then do an extensive interview at the beginning of the research and at the end of the research, and see what we found, see what we find, yeah. And it's about, it might be enjoyment, it might be social interaction, and it might be something positive for their well-being as well. So it's just it's watch this space, basically, in terms of it.
It's exciting.
It is, and As I listened to you talk this morning, and I heard other people asking you questions, one of the frequently asked questions is, what's getting in the way? It seems like we all agree with this idea of introducing sports and recreation into the school curriculum, but there are major obstacles. What are the major obstacles you were facing in trying to implement this, or get it implemented?
School curriculum. In England, the national curriculum is robust. Teaching time, it's very difficult.
So every minutes are accounted for.
But saying that, it's the popularity of the game is the most important. You need a game with popularity. In England, it is very popular. It is popular, but in China, it's hugely popular.
What is that?
Snooker.
Snooker.
It's hugely popular in China. They have now embedded it into their curriculum, where in their physical education sessions, you can play snooker if you want to. But then I think they're not looking from a pedagogical stance. They're looking at from a competitive kind of sporting way as well. So this is a sport that you can get encouraged with. Certainly in England, what they've done, well, snooker have done, is in terms of getting it into the pedagogic arena, the curriculum arena, is use it for something called Q for Schools. And basically it's allowing children to come in, play the game, learn arithmetic, how to add up, and etc. Learn about physics as well, maths and English, and improve just the basics in terms of what they can do. So they can enjoy themselves while they're doing it, but also learn a bit more around the curriculum as well. So it's just finding a way of how it fits in neatly to the curriculum, and then encouraging the teachers to take it on and use it as a secondary activity. As you know, with teaching, you need to have different types of activities to keep your students engaged with, as opposed to just standing there and lecturing. So it could be it's used as one of those activities to get the children to engage, and then use it for them to learn as well, and enjoy what they're doing as well.
I love what you mentioned in your talk. You just kind of touched on it there, the way that it's a sport that can be used to teach, you know, to emphasize mathematics skills and physics, and as well as geometry, angles. And we don't think about, I think that we sort of restrict the way that we teach sometimes to things that are sort of more classical or traditional. And, you know, when you have sort of that non-traditional learner, or that student who needs something maybe a little bit more functional to appreciate, you know, why do I need to know about angles, or why do I need to know about supplementary angles or complementary angles or something like that. You can take a game like this and show how it's used and how it can be applied to something that you just do for fun.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, we think about the learners that we have. They learn in three ways: kinesthetically, orally, or verbally. Through lectures as well. But through kinesthetic activities, you can certainly do that, propel this kind of activity there. And children learn by doing. I think we've known that for years and centuries. They learn by doing. So if you can give them something, an activity that they could use, and it's just the same as an abacus. You know, you begin to count, you begin to learn. And once you do that from that, you can use a game like snooker as an abacus to turn around and learn your numbers and etc. Started from a very early age. So it can be beneficial, a lot beneficial if it's implemented in schools, a lot more beneficial for everyone, teachers and the students as well.
Absolutely. And you were asked this question during the question and answer time about, you know, what other sports do you think this kind of model or this kind of consideration could be applied to? And I loved your response. Every sport.
Yeah, it literally can. It can be applied to every sport. We learn from every sport. We practice from every sport. And most of all, we enjoy every sport. And if you enjoy playing, you're going to learn. And you're going to get better at it. And once you get better at it, that's going to help you in terms of your stress. It'll help you concentrate. It'll help you level out what in terms of your thinking. It'll give you something to do, take you out of what your normal daily life is. And I think if we incorporate snooker as an activity of daily living, even if it's half an hour for somebody, as an activity of daily living, it enhances their life. It will certainly enhance their life.
Absolutely. absolutely. And in the, whether it's snooker or some other sport, you know, we talked also about the idea of the mind-body connection. And, you know, when your body is healthy, when you're using it, and your body's healthy, your mind is going to be healthy. And so your mental health is going to improve as your physical health improves. And, you know, so all of that is so closely intertwined that, you know, it's silly to think about them as two separate things. There's no reason to believe that sport can't improve mental health.
Of course, without a doubt. And I think I proved it in my study.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was great.
We've taken some wrong turns in education in our country, and we need to start reintroducing this stuff. I was speaking to a woman from the Philippines, she's a teacher, and has been reprimanded because she wants to give her students recess, and if they catch her outside after having recess, she gets written up for insubordination. So it's an epidemic. And we do away with recess in our schools for years. It's gradually coming back. But all of these things, I think, could have an effect.
Yeah, I think we're teaching now, we're moving so much more towards a computerized way of teaching, a blended learning way of teaching, e-learning as well. I think it needs to come, actually, I personally think it needs to drive back into what we normally used to do, and using equipment that we have, using resources that we have, thinking outside of the box when we can, as opposed to just being reliant on something on a screen or something on a laptop or something on an application, and using that and directing our students somewhere else. I think we need to go, and I think I'm pretty sure it may reverse in a few years. I'm hoping it does, where game sports, other activities will be used as the catalyst for learning, as opposed to turn around saying, here's an iPad, find out from yourself or et cetera, this is what we've got.
Right. Turn off again.
Yeah, they'll be naturally curious.
Yeah.
So, but yes, it's, we need to have that, the pendulum needs to shift back to the other way, and it is, as you said, it's slowly getting that way. It's slowly moving in that direction, at least in the States, where there have been a lot of people speaking out about the need for recess, and the kids were not having recess, they were only having physical education like twice a week. So, you know, they're stuck in the classroom, they're stuck inside all day long, and they're not allowed to talk, they're not allowed to interact with others, and it's not very conducive to learning the way that we know that learning takes place. So,
yeah. And it's a sad way it's going. We're doing it the same in England. They've reduced the amount of physical education time and hours. What we got now, rising obesity in young children, even from the age of 5 and upwards, and that's what it is, and it's not getting out there doing what we used to do. And then it's kind of like people my age, I'm not going to say Richard's age at all, but people our age in terms of a generation, turn around and say, you know, years ago we'd send the children out and they'll play out for hours and come back in and do whatever they need to do. Now it's all about sitting by a computer or sitting by something that's pixelated on a screen, and that's it, and that's where you get your enjoyment from. But it is about, and I think that, you know, in terms of some games as well, and some sports as well, how are we, if children are doing that in a decade's time, how are we going to get our next elite set of elite sports people if they're not going to be actively participating in the sport, and et cetera as well? So, you know, it's worth considering if you want to be the next top snooker player, you need to actively play the game. If you want to be the next basketball player, you need to actively play the game. I know that from one of the conversations of the presentation, America's seeking its next Michael Jordan. That's not going to happen when you've got millions of children just glued to an iPad.
Absolutely.
That's not going to happen at all.
Absolutely. It's true. So. Well, I can't wait to see what the next round of your research does, and we will definitely have to talk about that prospective study. I think that would be fascinating. But tell the listeners how they can follow your work, where they can find your work, how they can follow what you're doing, social media, any of those
things? Yeah, yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Rohit Sagoo. You can follow me on Facebook, Rohit Sagoo as well. And you're welcome. If you need questions or etc., you're welcome to email me at rohitsagoo@gmail.com. I've also got a website with all my research and everything else as well. That's www.rohitsagoo.co.uk. So feel free.
Fantastic.
We will be in touch.
Lovely. Oh, okay. Look forward to hearing from you.
Yeah, we can't wait to get together again.
Definitely. Without a doubt.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning. Thank you.